Ladies, welcome to our Bible study segment. We are in the book of Esther. Now here's our Bible study teacher, Beth Seifert.
Oh, thank you, Amy. I'm so glad to be back today. Well, we're going to pick up today in Esther, and we're going to start in chapter 2. We're going to read the first 11 verses and see what has been going on since the king has sent away his wife. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to Esther chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. After these things, when the anger of King Ahasuerus had abated, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's young men who attended him said, "Let beautiful young virgins be sought out for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom to gather all the beautiful young virgins to the harem in Susa, the citadel, under custody of Hegai, the king's eunuch who was in charge of the women. Let their cosmetics be given them, and let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti." This pleased the king, and he did so. Now there was a Jew in Susa, the citadel, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, son of Shimei, son of Kish, a Benjaminite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem among the captives carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away. He was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, the daughter of his uncle, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman had a beautiful figure and was lovely to look at, and when her father and her mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. So when the king's order and his edict were proclaimed, and when many young women were gathered in Susa the citadel in custody of Hegai, Esther also was taken into the king's palace and put in custody of Hegai, who had charge of the women. And the young woman pleased him and won his favor, and he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and her portion of food and with 7 chosen young women from the king's palace, and advanced her and her young women to the best place in the harem. Esther had not made known her people or kindred, for Mordecai had commanded her not to make it known. And every day Mordecai walked in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and what was happening to her. Well, it's been about 7 years that have passed since the big party where Vashti was deposed. Remember, Ahasuerus was throwing that party to garner support for the war he wanted to fight. The war has now been fought, and now he has time to think about other things, like wanting another queen. But look at what he recalls. He recalls what he decreed about her. Yeah, he remembered that irrevocable decree that says the queen is no longer to appear before him. Ever. Now, we don't get a hint here that she was killed. He remembers his decree about her, not what was done to her in terms of execution. And remember, God doesn't hide those things from in his word. If somebody is going to be murdered, we hear about it. If read back through 1 and 2 Samuel and all of the ways that the Bible plainly describes how some of those poor people were killed. If Vashti had been sent to her death, I think we would have been told. Still, the king remembers what he's done, and we see that there are signs in him of feeling regret or remorse about that decision. So his advisors propose a new queen be found, because they want the king happy after all. Now again, remember how large this realm is. The Persians had a huge territory here, so the king's officials recommend that a hunt be made for all the provinces, and that's no small task. All the women are brought to the harem and placed under the care of Hegai, who was the king's eunuch. Now, in that day and age, the man put in charge of the king's wives or concubines was pretty much always a eunuch. Sometimes he might have been a eunuch by birth or illness, and sometimes they would castrate a man to make him into a eunuch. This way, the women under his care would be assured to be kept for the king only, yet they would also be protected. This advice pleases the king, and he sends out the messengers to find him a new queen. Remember, he wanted Vashti to come and show off how beautiful she was to all his men, right? So this advice to find all the most beautiful women of his whole land, well, that speaks to his own vanity and desire to have the best of all things. And remember, a challenger to the throne could also take one of the king's wives as his own wife and claim that he had a right to take the throne as well. So by having eunuchs as the only men that were allowed around these women, the threat of a challenger to the throne from that corner was much less. Now, this isn't as simple as let me see all the eligible maidens and see who I like. In fact, from the time that he decided to find himself a new queen, it was over a year before any of the women were even ready to be viewed by him. The beauty treatments mentioned in verse 3 are elaborated on later, but for now, know that this process took a full year. A full year of beautifying the most beautiful women in the land to make them really, really beautiful. Now we get to meet Mordecai. Now this, to me, is totally fascinating, because look at who Mordecai's ancestor was. Kish. The genealogies often didn't include every single name on the list of who begat whom. They included often the well-known names, and that might be all. We see that in the genealogy of Jesus, in the book of Matthew and the book of Luke. But now, that may not mean much to you, but if you know your history of the kings of Israel, there's a name that should pop right out at you. Kish. See, the first king of Israel was Saul, the son of Kish, of the tribe of Benjamin. In the Talmud, which is the Jewish holy book, that gives us a little more of this genealogy, and here's what I just love. Mordecai was the son of Yair, son of Shimei, son of Shmida, son of Bana, son of Ayla, son of Micah, son of Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, son of Saul, son of Kish. So Mordecai, he's a descendant of Saul through Jonathan's line. Jonathan, the beloved friend of David, and Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth, who was crippled when the nurse carrying him dropped him as they were running from the palace after Saul and Jonathan had been killed in battle. Mordecai has some seriously impressive lineage, but as God has promised, Mordecai doesn't have a claim to the throne. God removed Saul and his line from the throne when God chose David to be king. Mordecai also has a cousin named Hadassah by the Jews, and Esther by the Persians. She was a beautiful woman. Hadassah was an orphan. Her parents had died, and Mordecai had taken her in as his own daughter and taken care of her. Hadassah, according to Jewish custom, means compassion. If you look it up in a baby book, though, it means myrtle, which was a type of fragrant tree, or it could also mean bride or star. Esther is one of two things. Either it is the Persian translation of bride or star, or it could be a form of the Persian goddess Ishtar. If you remember again from Daniel, from the book of Daniel, that Daniel and his three friends were given different names. Their Jewish names were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. However, those names were a sticking point for the Babylonians because each of them pointed to the one true God. So they changed their names to reflect their own false gods. And Daniel was known as Belteshazzar, Hananiah became Shadrach, Mishael became Meshach, and Azariah became Abednego. Something similar is going on here with Esther and Hadassah. What we know about Esther right from the start is that she was beautiful. She had a lovely figure, and she was beautiful. So from first glance, she appears pleasing to the eyes, but what about her character? Well, we know that when she was put into the harem, more than just her beauty shone through. After all, she's in this harem with all of the most beautiful women in the land, yet she immediately won the favor of Hegai, who was in charge of the harem. So we know that there had to be something special about her character. We could speculate on all sorts of attributes that could have caused this, humility, respectfulness, diligence, etc., but we're not told what pleased Hegai, just that he was pleased with her. As a result, he gives Esther advantages over the other women in the harem. He liked her, and he treated her better than the other women and made sure she got the best of everything, including the best food, beauty treatments, and she got personal attendance. And now we see where some intrigue comes into the plot. Mordecai forbade Esther from revealing her nationality or family background. We aren't given a why here. We don't know why he told her not to share this information. She was born in Persia during the time of the captivity, so they may not even have asked the question. Esther is still under Mordecai's protection as she is not a wife yet, and she obeys him. She submits to him and doesn't tell anyone where she is from. And Mordecai is still protecting her. He comes every day to walk near the courtyard of the harem to find out how she was and make sure she was okay. Now, here's what really struck me as I read this. Look at it. Look at all the ways in which God has been working behind the scenes to put Esther into this position. This honestly goes all the way back to the first king of Israel. And we'll see more of that connection as we meet some of the other people in this book. But for today, let's look at what is here. Saul, the first king of Israel, had a son, Jonathan. Jonathan was dearest friends with David, and they swore an oath to care for each other's families if something happened to one of them. Jonathan dies, and David is made king, and David seeks out Jonathan's heir, Mephibosheth, a crippled man, living off the charity of others. David keeps his promise and provides for Mephibosheth and his family, giving Mephibosheth a place to live, and even ordering Saul's land be cultivated and the profits to go to Mephibosheth and his family. Because David rescued Mephibosheth, his line continued, and Mordecai is born a few generations later. Mordecai raises his orphaned cousin, provides for her well-being, and all of that happens, and we see the hand of God placing Esther into the palace. When the casting call goes out for a new queen, Esther is chosen as one of many prospects. Yet there's something about her that from the very beginning garnered her the support and care of Hegai, the man who had the king's ear regarding selection of a queen. This support and special treatment not only helped to ensure a favorable appearance before the king, but she was given the best place in the harem, a place that had more freedom, and also kept her away from the prying, jealous eyes of the other women in the harem. And so Esther was able to continue to worship God as the law commanded. Being moved to a different room to live in and being given servants to take care of her needs enabled her to live a much different life from even the other women in the harem. Now, I ask you, when Esther's parents died, do you think she thought, oh, praise God? I'm betting not. When they were part of the Jews captive in Persia, do you think Mordecai thought, wow, this is great. It's so wonderful being in captivity. Again, probably not. Those things were completely outside of Esther and Mordecai's control, but they remained faithful to God as they endured these trials. And God was just setting the stage for showing his glory and power in the rescue of his people. Mephibosheth had no idea that his descendant would be used in this way. If any one of a thousand things had been slightly different, this whole story would be different. But God was the one in control of all of those details, big and small, and here we are, generations after the first king of Israel, and even a couple generations after the final king of Judah, and we see God's hand moving in the big picture all along. Think about the things that have happened that have brought you to where you are. Things that you truly had no part in, like the family you were born into, or the death of a loved one, or a government legislation, or changes that you had no control over. Even if your situation right now seems bleak, do you know that you can trust in him to walk you through it, to carry the load with you? How can we doubt that God is working in our lives when we can see such amazing evidence as just the background plot exposition of Esther? Ladies, he is in control of all things, even when they hurt and even when we don't understand them. You can trust in him, and you're going to see that even more clearly in the days to come. But for today, know that God's hand was in putting Esther on the throne. Know that all the things that he lined up, and know that he has that care for you as well.
Well, thank you, Beth. And ladies, that lesson that you just heard is available in a 10-minute audio segment on our website today, along with the individual study guide for today. And look for it at naomistable.com under the Bible Study tab. You can use these as a study for yourself or to teach women around your own table. Nancy and I will be back to talk more about today's lesson in just a moment.